This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good Thursday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I am Alice Jovich from Arlington, Texas. And you are listening to a special trail riding episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for May 21st, episode 1174. This episode is brought to you by the North American Trail Ride Conference and the Trail Versatility Championship in Texas. Good morning, Horse World.
I'm so happy it's Thursday.
Just an ordinary day.
If you love to ride horses, but you'd rather ride on a trail than in an arena, I think I know a sport just for you.
We're out. We're getting to the first mark. We're a little ahead of time.
Expect nothing less than full-blown chaos.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us. Yes, it is trail day here on Horses in the Morning. Alice joins us the third Thursday of every month from the North American Trail Ride Conference, and we appreciate her being here. Alice, I know you need some space to do your shows, right? You need a little space in order to do your shows. Well, there's that little farm that's for sale right down the road from you there in Texas. You can have all the space you want.
Which little farm?
Wagoner Ranch. I don't know if you saw that. It's America's biggest ranch. Just went up for sale. 510,000 acres. You could do a lot of shows on 510,000 acres. And a nice added bonus is it comes with 250 cowboys. So there you go.
I hadn't heard about the ranch being for sale, but that always worries me when they start selling the big ranches, because I always visualize them putting up a whole lot of houses.
Yeah, well, this already has hundreds of homes. Comes with the sale price of $725 million.
Oh, there you go.
Hundreds of homes, 20 cowboy camps. I don't know what those consist of. And you get hundreds of quarter horses with it, along with the thousands of heads of cattle and 30,000 cultivated acres.
It covers,
I think it's like 9 Texas counties. Oh, my God.
So why is it for sale?
The guy died, Wagoner, the old man died, and it's been in court disputes with the kids ever since court disputes. And apparently the court finally settled it, so now it's gone up for sale. There's 1,200 oil wells on there, too, which probably helps pay for the ranch, I would assume. You could get a showing, but they do check your credit first. They take you. Yeah. So I'm done. I'm out.
Yeah. My credit's okay, but my income is sorely lacking for that kind of a purchase.
See, I'm lacking in both, so I'm screwed. They're never going to let me go look. I can't even look at. I probably wouldn't even be able to look at one of the cowboy camps.
There you go.
Hey, I wanted to mention one other thing for our regular listeners here at Horses in the Morning. We had a guest on last week from EQ Sportsnet. It's a brand new website that's covering sporting events by live video. And their first show was the Devon Horse Show going on right now in Pennsylvania, big horse show there. And it is now live. So they went live last night and they are live right now. You can hop on there. It's free to watch all the action from Devon, and they have all different kinds of classes at Devon, from driving to riding to jumping to hunters, just a little bit of everything, plus a lot of fun stuff too. So you can check out the live schedule there. It looks very good. It's the first time I've seen the website live. It's eqsportsnet.com. They're not sponsors or anything. It's just we always love when we get new websites that are going to help us watch things that we love so much. And actually, I got the website wrong. It's eqsports.net. eqsports.net is the website. Don't do it till after the show. then you can go watch. No. There's nothing good on now. I just looked. Nothing's happening until 10:30, and then the show starts. Maybe
there
hide a little about that, but
start with that.
Alice and I are
going to
stick with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jennifer, what's coming up on today's show?
On today's NATRC episode, it is disastrous weather season now. So we're going to open with a list of emergency evacuation pointers for us horse folks. And then next up, Karen Everhart from Rainbow Meadows stops by to talk about horse rescue and retirement. And then we head north to Alaska to learn all about the vibrant competitive trail community there with Lori. Help me out with how you pronounce Lori's last name, Alice.
I don't even know. We will have to have her pronounce it for us.
It's
going to
be Lori from Alaska, and she's going to be great. So stay tuned for the fairy, folks.
I'm always willing to embarrass myself. Is it like Nutella? Sort of like Nutella? Nutella?
I've heard several people say it, and nobody seems to say it right. So I'm going to let her tell us how she does it properly.
Well, it sounds like a native Alaskan name, actually. It's spelled like one, too, so we're probably all getting it way wrong. Well, just call her Lori. Lori from Alaska. We'll just make the leap she doesn't have a last name. But I'm excited about that. I always love about hearing about the strange places that people get to ride. We just had a guy on the driving show from Sweden who drives in Sweden and does a lot of sleigh stuff in Sweden. And it's so interesting to hear about what they have to go through just to take care of their horses, you know, and to do all different kinds of things. And she's got the same problem.
Yeah, she's told me some really good stories that she's going to share with you guys. So
oh, terrific.
She's full of information.
Now, for those that are listening from around the world, Alice lives in Texas. And Texas, for the last, what seems like 100 years, has been going through a drought. Well, they ended that last week. Tell us about what's been going on in Texas.
Well, yeah, we've had a drought. The last time we had to worry about flooding was like 2008. And we've had a drought since then. And over the last month, we've had some places have had upward of 10 or 11 inches of rain, and all the lakes are now full. Some of them are over full. There's water everywhere. And one of the things that's happened in Eastland, Texas, there was a family that had to rescue 31 ponies and horses from their property. They had been gone out of town. And while they were gone, it rained an inordinate amount of rain. And it turned out one of the gates had gotten closed by some of the debris, so the horses couldn't let themselves out to go to higher ground. And they had to swim in and walk in and drive, you know, ride other horses in to save these horses. I mean, it was crazy, you know, what they went through to get their horses saved. There's been rescues all over the state. Up near Denton, there's a lake called Ray Roberts, and they've been talking about having to open the gates to let some of the water out of the river or out of the lake, which will then flood some of the houses downstream, which all have livestock. And so, I mean, it's just been a crazy few weeks. All these competitions we were supposed to have in May have all been canceled. I was supposed to manage a ride the first week of May, and the landowner said after the first set of rain that the water was so saturated, the water was actually coming up from the ground. And then that softens the ground, and all these trees that died during the drought all started to fall down. So all the work that my trail master had done all spring went to pot because she, you know, all the stuff she had trimmed, all these new trees are falling because the root system was dead, and so there's nothing to hold them in the ground anymore. And so we canceled our ride. Well, we postponed our ride. It's not canceled. We're going to do it Labor Day weekend. And so then the next week was free. Well, then it rained some more. And another one of our trail challenges got canceled. And my same group of people went out to see if it was going to be okay to do our trail challenge, which was supposed to be next weekend. And they all three fell in a bog. They just going along, and all of a sudden their horses sunk to their bellies in something that formerly had been just fine. It was just nice sandy trail, and now it was a bog. And so we were supposed to go to a competition in Oklahoma this weekend, and they're expecting over 5 inches of rain this weekend on already saturated ground. So it got postponed until June. So
do you think Mother Nature looks down from her perch and goes, "You people are never happy"? First yeah. It was dry, and then I give you some rain, and then you whine about that. You know, it's cold in the winter, and then you whine in the summer. Do you think she's just sitting up there on a rosy perch going, God, I can't please these people?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not actually. The rain, we needed the rain. We just kind of didn't need it all at once.
Yeah, exactly. And that's usually the way it happens, too, because the ground is also so hard after you've had all that drought for 5 years. Ground's
right.
So hard that it just all runs off.
Yeah, and last week we had one dry day, and so I went to our field and got my trailer out so that I could go compete this weekend. I parked it in the driveway, which that's interesting and fun to park a 30-something foot gooseneck trailer in a narrow driveway on a city street. That was exciting. But if I don't park it in the driveway, the mailman won't deliver the mail. So because they can't get out of the truck and put it in
right.
the mailbox.
All right.
So, so my trailer's in the driveway, and I spent Monday, which was also a little bit dry, getting all ready to go. Everything's packed. Everything's ready. And then they called the ride late Monday. So, there is an endurance ride this weekend, though, in Killeen, Texas, at Perry Haynes Ranch. And so a lot of folks who were going to go to Oklahoma are going down there. But as fate would have it, my husband snatched from my rosy grasp, and we are now taking lots of things to the dump instead, because my truck will be here.
Oh, so. There you go. Husband won out this weekend?
Well, yeah. I mean, we've been doing
it
for a long time.
You know, we have to win occasionally. You know, occasionally you have to let us win.
It needs to be done. So it's either now or later, and it'll be hot later. So I can do it in the rain, or I can do it in 100 degrees, and I think I'd rather do it in the rain.
You know, if you own 510,000 acres, there's probably
right.
a part of your property that's wet, a part that's dry. There's always a place to go that has a different climate.
that's probably true.
My farm is big enough that I have more than one climate.
Climate, yeah. I need a weather station right in the middle just to tell me what it's going to be like on the other side.
Right. Probably
you
true.
Know, I've never been to Texas. I'm going for the first time in July. I have to go to a conference there in Fort Worth, and I'm hoping to drive around a little bit. I have never been to Texas to drive through the expanses of ranches that everybody talks about. I just can't imagine the size of some of these places.
You'll have to get away from Dallas-Fort Worth to see them.
Yes.
Because
I'm going to have to do that.
I think that they believe here in the city that every square inch should be covered with a building. Because
right.
I've been renting a pasture in the south part of Arlington for 7 years, and I've been very happy there. My landlord, you know, we get along really well. The horses are really happy. And the school next door has decided they want the pasture to build a gymnasium for their school. So sometime this year, I have to move the horses, and I've been looking, and I can't find anything like what I have. I found a place that had no turnout. They have 30 acres, but they won't turn the horses out because the fence backs up to the interstate, and they see people are always monkeying with the fence. So they can have a stall, but they can never go outside.
Oh, and that's not a life for a horse.
That doesn't work so well for my horses. And I found another place that had pasture and stalls, but it was more money for one horse in the pasture than it cost for my whole field that I rent. It's like, and that'll be $385 for pasture board. And I was like, okay, no. So,
yeah. All right. Well, let's do this thing. We were talking about flooding. That leads in perfectly. And this is something we haven't talked about this season yet on the show here. And that is emergency planning and preparation. So you want to lead the way on that?
Sure. All the flooding. A lot of us have had to think about evacuation plans and disaster planning. That, you know, it's not something that we typically think about during a drought year, is worrying about evacuating for a flood. But I did actually board somewhere once where we had to move the horses and all our stuff to higher ground because it was the last time it flooded. Because the ground around the barn, you know, the water would come up very fast and you'd have to get the horses to higher ground very quickly. And so it's always a good idea to keep in mind that this could happen at any time. Always be prepared to get your horse out of harm's way. If you have a 2-horse trailer and 4 horses, you need to plan ahead even faster because you're going to have to make a couple trips. Your horse's food and water should be kept in a waterproof container if possible, because you don't want all the floodwaters coming, you know, if you're going to leave the horse on the property, you don't want the floodwaters washing into their water trough or into their food and water supply, because that can cause, you know, contamination, and there's a lot of germs and things that float in with the floodwaters. Plus, it'll ruin your feed. If your feed gets wet, you know, you've just lost however much feed you had. However, you also need to think about the amount of humidity, because if you store too much feed, the humidity, even if your feed doesn't get directly wet, you could still have a mold problem, and that can be an issue.
We have that normally every day down here in Florida. We can't keep a whole lot of grain around because in 3 or 4 days, right, it's going to be gone anyway.
Yeah, I had a bag of feed I left in the trailer after the last ride, and it was in the middle of the trailer, so it didn't actually get rained on, but just the humidity of it being in the bag, next time I opened it, it was disgusting.
Yeah. So, horse trailers and horse feed bags do not get along.
So, you know, like a big plastic water barrel for fresh water, because you don't know how long you might not have water, because, you know, sometimes they shut down the municipal water systems for flooding, or you have a boil order, or you have to, you know, you have to drink bottled water if you're a person. You take a lot of bottles to fill your horse trough. So, I mean, you can imagine the visualization on that. You know, and hay, too, you need to be able to have some dry hay, because, like, I know the time we had to evacuate, we had 7 acres that were mostly dry, and then we had the other 10 acres that were completely wet, and some of it came up, so, like, all the horses were on the highest part, and it was tough. You know, like, we had put a round bale out in the middle of the highest part, but it was hard to keep, you know, to keep them in feed and water and hay, because, you know, you were canoeing, not literally, because we didn't. We just left them on the round bale for a few days, waiting for the water to go down. So, you know, you have to plan ahead and know where you can take them. And if you can't put them on your property, you need to have an evacuation plan for where they can go. Like, in my case, you know, my property is not going to flood that I'm on now, but, you know, I have friends that have property that have higher ground or it isn't raining quite as much. So you can always take them, you know, to a friend's house if you have friends, which most of us do, right? So your truck and your trailer should be totally ready to go. You know, you should have all your fuel that you need in your truck, and, you know, have everything ready to go, because if you get in a flood situation, you may not have time to pack. You're just going to have to get out, because the water can rise really, really fast. Keep your horse's paperwork where you can find it. I know, like, since I travel a lot, all my paperwork stays in a binder in my truck. You know, like, all my Coggins papers and vaccination records and my dog's paperwork as well all stay in the truck, so that I don't ever have to wonder where it is. But, you know, and if your horses are microchipped or tattooed, you should have that paperwork in your truck too. So if for some reason you lose an animal during a disaster, you have the proof to match back up with them later on, you know, heaven forbid. Another suggestion is to take a picture of your horse with yourself or family member to keep in your binder. That also helps add to proof of ownership, should anything be questioned later on.
That's a good idea, actually. I didn't think about that.
You need to be in the picture, not just the horse.
You need to be in the picture. Right, because you could have any random picture of a horse, and, you know, and if your horse has any unusual marking, that's good to keep track of too.
What I didn't think of is just you made me think of something here before you get off of the microchipping, because we did that with our horses. Is when you go on vacation, if we go on vacation and leave the horses behind, this is a different topic, but it made me think of it now. Just, I'm saying this for Jennifer's benefit because I'll forget. When we go on vacation and leave for a week at a time, we should bring that information with us, so that if the horses do get loose, it's not stuck in a file cabinet back here. We can talk to whoever our emergency people are here and have the information at hand.
Right, because you could then fax that to them so they can see.
Yeah. Good point. Thank you for that. Okay, sorry.
No, that's good. That was a good idea. It says other items that you should have on hand would be a breakaway web-type halter with your horse's name on it. And you should also have, like, your name and phone number and all your emergency information in a waterproof Sharpie. We were lucky enough to be given some cute little tags as ride completion awards recently. And that worked out really well because you can write on the back in Sharpie. In the front, you know, says you know, Natrack, love my horse, and then the back has your information, and you can put that on their halter. And the reason you want a breakaway halter is if your horse was wearing a halter because it was in a disaster situation, but it got hung up, it would break the leather, so your horse would get loose. I mean, if you had a web halter on and your horse gets hung up, it's never getting free. You know,
yeah.
Not without a whole
yeah.
lot of work or some injury.
Right.
Be sure and have a portable first aid kit with you. I know that's something that I keep meaning to put together myself, and I keep not getting the job done. I used to have one, and then I used everything. You know, but having a first aid
See,
kit
that's the problem
a
with
idea.
The first aid kit, and you should have one. You go away all the time.
I know.
But, yeah, but that's the problem with the first aid kit is you use one thing out of it, and then the next trip you use another thing, and you keep saying to yourself while you're there, I'm going to replace that when I get home, and then when you get home, you never do.
Right.
It's exactly what happens. You're absolutely right. You're not the only one guilty of that.
Well, I had a really nice one full of like essential oils and stuff, and over time they just all got used. And then I went to go use it, and I was like, "Oh wow, there's nothing in here." So that's not good. It says bring a 3-day supply of food and water to load in your horse trailer, because like if you're evacuating with your horse, you know, like a lot of people live with their horses. Or fortunately for them, you know, and if your place is flooded, you have to leave too. So you need to make sure that you're fully packed. It's kind of like, you know, emergency preparedness for the home. You need to have it for your go-away plan. Like in my trailer, I have a little pantry that has all kinds of canned goods in it. And, you know, I have my generator and I have gas and all that stuff. So wherever I land, I can heat up a can of beans anyway. And the horse, you know, and if you do the same for your horse, then if you have to go to a state park or something, you know you're set for a few days, even if you can't get back out of the state parks. You know, for example. So, and your, you know, your disaster plan ought to be in writing. And if possible, you should let your neighbors know what your plan is so that if for some reason they find you suddenly gone, you know, if you have neighbors that notice you're gone, you know, they know where you went. And so if other people
come looking
for
you.
If you have neighbors that care. Well, I mean, let's be honest. I live in the city and I know some of my neighbors, and I don't know some of my neighbors.
So. Right, exactly. Well, we live in the country, and it's the same way. So.
So, but I mean, you know, and sometimes you have neighbors that you're friends with, and it'd be good if your family or your neighbors, you know, knew so that people don't have to worry about you because, you know, I suppose in a bad enough disaster, you could lose cell service or phone service. So,
right. And you know something?
Go ahead.
Finish up.
Go on. No, go ahead.
When it comes to natural disasters and impending natural disasters, it's a good time to become a nosy neighbor. Even if you don't know your neighbor or you don't get along with them particularly well, you know, it's a good idea to say, hey, we're getting the heck out of here. Do you need any help getting the heck out of here too, et cetera? You know, set all that aside for a day.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because, you know, a disaster is a great time to bond with your fellow man because so many people will be in the same boat. And literally a boat if you have the flooding we've had. So,
right.
If you find a loose horse, you know, like if you've had a flood or you've had a tornado, because I know whenever we have tornadoes, there's always the great debate about do you put the horse in or do you turn the horse loose? And I've always been of the mind to braid tags with my horse's information in their mane. And my information, and I turn them loose. And that way, if somebody finds my horse, they can contact me because I worry about them being inside and the barn falling on them. It just seems like they'd be safer if there's a safe place.
Yeah,
safer
I mean,
out.
We've had this argument about 100 times on the air, and I can argue, if I was in court, I could argue both sides because outside they're more prone to projectiles, pieces of branch and tree and anything else sitting around going at about 100 miles an hour right at them. So they have that if they're out of the barn where maybe they're protected from that a little bit. But, you know, in those situations like hurricanes or tornadoes or bad winds, I mean, it's like flip a coin. It's where, you know, where is the
right.
thing that's trying to kill my horse going to be? And you don't know that. So,
right.
you know, it could be outside. It could be inside. You got to do one or the other. So.
And if you're going to have a tornado situation, there's really not any way to evacuate from a tornado. They come up like the one the other night close to us was in Wise County, Paradise, and they call it a town called Runaway Bay. It wasn't even on the radar. It just like, boom, it popped up and there was a tornado and it flattened this little town.
I saw the pictures from that too, and it really did flatten this whole town.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no way to prepare for that circumstance.
That is one advantage of flooding or hurricanes, as you know they're coming at least, or you know it develops over a period of time rather than instantly.
Right. And you know, if you have to leave your horses. If you have to leave them, try to leave them in as safe an area as possible and leave them enough water and food for 2 or 3 days so that they, you know, are able to fend for themselves in the event that you can't get back to them right away. I mean, I suppose if it's flooding, water's not going to be an issue.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, good water is an issue, but.
Right.
Yeah. Well, very good.
I was saying also contact your Humane Society because, you know, if you're missing an animal, they may be the first people who know that who have your horse or know where it is.
Very good. That was terrific. And all of that, what you found that where on infohorse.com?
Yes, infohorse.com.
Okay. All right, very good. Well, and I know real quick here before we get to our first guest that you had a product you tried out and really liked. So I want to hear about that.
Yes. Easy Care, who is one of our national NATRC sponsors, you know, they make boots and they sell different saddle accessories, but they make a product called High Tie. And the High Tie is an arm that you attach to your trailer. It's made out of fiberglass and it's set in aluminum and you drill holes and you mount it to your trailer. And it's really easy to mount. My husband did it for me during an hour that I was out on the trail one Saturday. And you set the arm. You can either have it flip either direction, like when you're closed up, it can go right or left, or you can even set it up to flip down so it lays flush against the trailer when you're traveling. And all you have to do to set it up is you pull a pin and swing the arm and then put the pin back in, and it's set. And it doesn't bounce. You know, it has a little bit of give to it, but like some of the high tie systems have a lot of spring to them, and they bounce a lot. And that feels bad when you're inside the trailer. So this one has a little bit of give, but it doesn't bounce.
And how long is it?
It's, you know, I haven't measured it, but I would say it's probably 5 feet.
Okay, so it's pretty long.
It's pretty long because, yeah. You know, it's like the horse, it's set on, you know, you set it as high as you can on your trailer. Like mine is set high enough that I have to stand on a stool to get the horse tied to it because okay. I'm short. So
the horse can move around. That's one of the
right.
goals. Yeah. Okay.
Right. And they actually, I have a nerdy friend who measured. She set up her high tie and then took her horse out as far as it could go. Because, like, we like our rope to be, you know, maybe 1 to 2 inches off the ground so that they can lay down and move around when they're tied up, but, you know, not get a leg over. So she set the rope up to the right length and she took her horse as far around as it could go, all the way around. And it was bigger than like a 12 by 12 pin. So like for people who carry panels, this actually gives your horse more space to move around than a pin. And a whole lot less hassle and worry and, you know, work to take a pin somewhere. And so also one of our members named Johnny Jewell makes this really awesome tie that goes with it. And she always donates them to our auctions, and I was lucky enough to win one. And she'll make them in whatever color you want, but it's got like 3 different points that you can quick release your horse from the high tie. So if your horse gets in trouble for any reason, it's really easy to get them free. It has Velcro at the top, and then there's a pin in the middle. You know, it's so if your horse really pulled, it would pull the Velcro loose if it got hung up and pulled loose. But that's what you want because you don't want your horse to get into trouble. So
right.
the two things together are just awesome. And she custom makes those for each trailer. So after you get your high tie installed, you measure from the bar to the ground and then contact her and she makes the tie to suit your needs. And it's a little bit adjustable so you can go a little shorter or a little longer. But it's just the coolest thing and they go together so well. And my horse will do anything. I mean, he'll ride. He'll either my horse will lay down at the trailer, or you know he can still reach his food, or he likes to go to the very end of his high tie and use the bathroom way out so that he doesn't like have to lay in his stuff. So,
well, that's nice of him.
Yeah.
makes brushing him the next day so much easier.
Yeah.
So, well, you know, I think that idea probably scares a lot of people who aren't trail riding people and who go to shows and things who would never think of tying their horse like that. I think it probably scares a lot of people who have never tried it or, you know, have horses that just wouldn't put up with it. So it's interesting to talk about because, you know, again, a lot of people have never tried it or would be scared to.
Well, and what I notice is that horses that tend to be pullers, they're going to pull more tied directly to a trailer. But like when you get them on the high tie, it's above their head and they don't feel as restricted. And if they did try to set back, they'd have to work at it a lot harder, you know, because it's over them. So, right. You know, they'd have to go out to the end of their rope. And most of the time the horse has enough room to move around that it doesn't seem as threatening. And a lot of horses are really fine with being tied up to the trailer. I would agree that that's something that intimidates people that aren't used to tying. But, you know, the horses really take to it quite well for the most part.
Now, my pony likes to roll on the cross ties. You know, he'll try and hang himself.
Wow.
So we don't cross tie him anymore because he, you know, he goes down to roll and then his head's all, you know, bent out of shape.
Right.
If they roll with that on, you know, they can lay down. They can get close enough to the ground to lay down. Do they get in trouble if they try and roll?
Not at all.
Okay.
My horse often rolls on the high tie. I sometimes have, if I want to keep him clean for whatever reason, I have to tie him to the trailer a little bit short because he will roll in any given situation. He just loves a good roll. So, I don't worry about him at all on the high tie.
Okay.
I worry about him when he rolls on the trailer. I don't like that. But on the high tie, it's perfectly safe.
Gotcha. And where does it, what was this called again?
It's by Easy Care. It's just called High Tie.
Okay.
Easy High Tie is the brand. And it's on their website. I think it's easycareinc.com.
Okay. Easycareinc.com. Got it. All right. Well, we'll check it out. Well, let's do this. Let's head over to our first guest.
Okay. Our first guest today is Karen Everhart. She is the owner of Rainbow Meadows Rescue and Retirement for Horses. She is a longtime distance rider, both of NATRC, and she started doing some AERC rides recently. She started in NATRC in 1999, and distance riding is described by her as being her greatest thrill. Welcome, Karen.
Good morning, Alice. How are you?
I'm great. How are you today?
Fine, thank you. It's sunshiny here. We've had lots and lots of rain, so I'm glad to see the sunshine today.
That's good. I didn't know if you guys were getting hammered with the same rain that we've been hammered with, or if you guys were better off, you know, as far as being wet.
After 5 years of drought, we are a mess, but we are grateful. We're not complaining.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So what got you started riding distance rides? First, you know, with NATRC and then later with AERC.
You know, my passion with horses is six decades old. And back in my 40s, I was looking for something that I could do with a lot of challenge for myself and the various horses that I had. And I had an opportunity to meet one of our leading NATRC judges, Priscilla Lindsay, her husband Steve, and somehow I found a flyer, can't even remember how, that they were conducting a clinic a few hours away from my home. So I attended that, fell in love, and the rest is history. Never looked back once I started writing NATRC and have found that it certainly did accelerate my horsemanship, accelerate my riding skills, accelerate my own personal goal setting, and just had a wonderful time.
Do you ever think back to the horse person that you were before NATRC and compare the two? Because I know I do that all the time.
Routinely, because I was so caught up in traditional kinds of handling of my horses, feeding of my horses, management of my horses. I heard the discussion that was going on earlier regarding the high ties. you know, at that point in time, just tying a horse overnight to the trailer seemed so very unfamiliar. And now, of course, it's second nature. And we understand that for the most part, our horses do beautifully with that. And with the advent of the high ties and some of the other equipment that is available to us, it's like, what the heck was I thinking? So, yeah, it's been a great transition.
So with your love of horses, it was natural, I guess, that you started wanting to help some of the less fortunate ones. How did the whole concept of Rainbow Meadows develop?
Interestingly, back in the late 90s, my husband was anticipating retirement, and I wanted to move away from the Wichita, Kansas area, where I had spent the majority of my life, into the country where I had spent many of my summers with my grandparents, summers and many weeks many weekends during the year. And what I wanted to do was have room for my horses, because they had been somewhat landlocked as Wichita began to expand and ended up annexing our property. So as we were looking for property, we came across this small pony that had foundered severely. He had been abandoned on a piece of property, and he was eating fescue grass persistently, and he was just getting worse and worse. And my conscience wouldn't let me leave him. So I worked with the broker to contact the owner of the property, and we were able to take this little guy back. We named him Mo. It took us 6 months to be able to return his feet to normal, take the rotation out of the coffin bone, and then we went, what are we going to do with a little pony? We have no little kids at home. And we found a home for him in northern Kansas. And so my thought was, I will help one or two horses once I get down to my ranch in Chautauqua County, and I will do that annually. One or two horses out of my back pocket will not be a big deal. And at the same time, I will be conditioning my horses, and I will be leading every weekend, and I will be competing in NATRC. That was my dream. That was my hope. Well, we're now 10 years into our rescue. We have rescued well over 210 horses. We have placed just under 200 horses. And there's very little time to ride and very little time to compete. But it was something that was brought to me in the sense that it was never my plan. It was something that I think was laid at my feet and was a commitment that was laid on my heart that said, these horses, these animals have been such incredible partners over your lifetime. It is time for you to pay back. So not a plan, but certainly became a purpose.
Wow. Well, I know I've been to your place. We did a centered riding clinic one time, many, many years ago. And it's a beautiful ranch, and you have it divided up kind of for different horses' needs. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because I know you had different horses at different levels of care.
Absolutely. We certainly start our horses in quarantine. Those paddocks are separate and apart from where our herd horses are. We then have what we call transition paddocks. Once the horses leave quarantine, they move to transition. We have no barbed wire on the interior of our property, so our horses can interact over barbless wire and address any of the hierarchy issues between the new horses and the herd. When that seems to be settled, then those horses can be turned into the herd, and we literally, I want to be very careful, knock on wood, we eliminate the potential of 40 to 45 herd horses running a new horse to the point of injury or exhaustion, et cetera. And then we have our 240 acres divided into 80-acre grazing sections, so we can effectively be good stewards of the land as we try to be good stewards for the horses. And so our horses have an opportunity to live like horses. We do have a 35-acre sacrifice area, so our horses can come off of pasture so they don't mess it up in times like this when everything is so wet and muddy, or as we had to for extended periods of time during the lengthy drought that we suffered. That keeps the land productive as far as grass production is concerned. So our horses get the opportunity to have good fresh grass. We are able to keep tabs on the weeds and the brush and allow them to live as horses rather than in small paddocks or certainly stalls or even very small pastures. You get a chance to get out and run and roam, which is great.
Karen, everybody in the Northeast who has their 2 and 5 acre farms was just drooling with you talking about all that.
Absolutely. And I hope with those 2 and 5 acre farms, you have introduced them to Pete Ramey's Pasture Paradise, or paddock paradise, so they can install those great, that great concept on their property and make it feel like it's a lot better.
Hey, what when you said barbless wire, what were you talking about? It's the first time I've ever heard that expression.
Okay. Well, typically barbed wire are barbs that are strung on a twisted wire.
Yeah, we all know barbed wires, and we always go, no, don't do that with horses.
Exactly. Absolutely. Barbed wire is a horse's nemesis. There's no question about that. And so barbless wire is that same twisted wire, and that is strung, that is then utilized as fencing without those barbs. So excluding the barbs themselves, everything looks similar to a barbed wire fence, but you don't have the risk factor associated with it. If a horse decides it's going to paw at that particular fence, it's not going to.
Is there several strands? Is it, how many strands then do you run?
We have four strands. Some people put up five, but we have four every foot.
Do you worry about it? Is it real tight? You know, down here in Florida, we'll have some people who have that really tight wire, not electric wire, but the really taut, high tensile wire. And, you know, you always you always worry about, you know, horses getting their legs between the strands and, you know, running into it and cutting themselves. Do you have that trouble there?
We don't. And that's one of the beauties about this. It, because it's not a high tensile and it's not as dense as the cable that you're likely referring to, it does, it's much more forgiving. We brought in three young yearlings at one point in time that had been confined to stalls all of their lives, and we put them in a small pasture, and it had rained just a little bit, just enough to make things slick. And these horses, we have white posts every 12 feet, so it's very visible to the horses. They were so clueless about being outside that they literally took off at an extended trot and ran into this fence chests. And the fence bent a little and retracted, and their feet went about 5 feet literally past the fence, and there was no injury whatsoever. And it was like, okay, you're doing your job, fence. Thank you very much.
It shot him back like a slingshot.
Not to that.
Wow.
Extent, but
it's, I know,
it's
just
them. Yes.
But I can't imagine. That's so cool to see three babies running around that never been out of a stall. They must have been like going nuts.
Absolutely. They were thrilled. A little confused, but thrilled. Yes.
Yeah.
So how many horses do you usually have on your place at the same time?
Our average census within the rescue and retirement program is around 40, anywhere between 35 and 45 at any given time. Then I personally have 12 horses. So we manage between 50 and 55 horses every day, and we are all volunteer. So it's quite a task to take care of these animals. Yeah.
So you said retirement. So people who have older horses can send them to you and, I guess, pay, like kind of like boarding them? Or how does that work?
We do have a retirement program. As a matter of fact, since this is involving distance, I will tell you that our oldest resident here is 35. He actually came from Australia for the World Equestrian Games 100-mile race that was held near Manhattan, Kansas in 1996 or 7. Unfortunately, he was pulled for lameness, which is very common. Usually around 60 to 70% of the horses are pulled during the 100-mile WEG. And he was diagnosed with very mild puddle osteitis by Kansas State. But Australia chose to leave him here. And he did go on to be a very successful NAPRC horse. And when he was diagnosed in 2005 with metastatic melanoma of guttural pouch origin, he was given a one-year prognosis, and his owner at that time said, can he come and live at the ranch? Because he lived in a very small, muddy paddock. Can he come and live here? And we agreed. That was in 2005 with a one-year prognosis. He's still with us. So that tells you he's living a very good life here in 2015 with Rainbow Meadows. But we do have a limited number of spaces for horses. Someone who loves their animal, wants them to have a good end of life, maybe can only manage one horse or two horses wherever, you know, whether they board or whatever. They have the opportunity to turn the horse over to us. We make all of the decisions, and then they make a monthly donation. It's not like boarding because they no longer own the horse, but it is a donation to support that care. So we call it a sponsorship. So it is a sponsorship program, and the horses just love it. You know, you can be, all three of our horses are well past the age of 30. They run and buck and kick and play with the other younger horses. They live very similar to the way horses would live in the wild, from the youngest of the herd to the oldest of the herd, and all genders are mixed, excluding stallions, of course. And they have lots of hills to climb and grass to eat.
Hey, I got two. I was on your page. I'm on RainbowMeadowsRanch.com, and I'm on the rescues page. And I got two that you can send over here to Florida, okay? The first one is Bluebell, the little mini. How cute is Bluebell? Wow.
And a roan. How cool is that, huh?
Yes. It's a blue roan with the black mane and tail and short little legs and a little fat belly. And I assume that that mare is all mini, the way her face looks. She just looks like she's all mini.
She's maybe a little tall. I mean, if someone really knows about miniatures.
No, I meant attitude-wise.
Oh, attitude-wise, absolutely. Full of herself.
I bet.
Yeah.
She has that ornery look about her. And then the other one I was on here looking around. Let me get down to here. Cookie the donkey. So cute.
Actually, Cookie is a henny, and henny is a mule, but it is a mix of a stallion, a horse stallion, and a donkey, a jenny, as opposed to most mules, which are the jack donkey and a mare. A henny is, it's still the same genetic cross, but generally stallions are not too interested in donkey mares and jennies. So the henny is much less common.
I was going to say, you don't see a lot of those. I bet you that thing would look so cute in my cart, because I drive ponies. That would
absolutely
look so cute in my cart. That would make a great little driving horse.
Yes, cookie, she would.
10 hands high, weighs 400 pounds, and cute as the Dickens.
And you'll notice the henny has a much more horse-looking face, even though they have
the
ears.
Yeah.
Where the mule tends to have a little more of a donkey-ish looking face, yeah.
Now, we haven't talked about hennies too much here on the show. Is their attitude more of a horse or a donkey or mule?
Oh, you know, I would say to you that they're more mule-ish, certainly not horse-ish, and certainly not donkey-ish, based on the numbers of mules and donkeys that we've had here over the years. She's going to be a little, if you've worked with mules at all, she's probably going to be on the top of the mule quotient as far as her stubbornness and her reactiveness. She doesn't have a lot of appreciation that she has to be messed with. So if you're doing her feed or deworming, she's very opinionated.
Uh-huh. Yeah, okay, so she got that trait. And then there was one other I got to mention on the page here. That I'm just looking at your adoption page, and you have so many cute ones. But the one that I love, stripes down the face, and I love some chrome. And this one has the stripe, no chrome, but the black legs is Stormy. Stormy looks so cute.
Stormy is a beautiful bay. She's a half Mustang, half pink. Her mama was actually taken off of the BLM property back in 1991 or 1992. I can't remember for sure. And she is just a lovely, lovely mare.
I know Jennifer and Alice, they've gotten quiet because they're also on the page looking. Who doesn't like the horse shop, right? I mean, everybody likes to look
also
at horses.
Well, that's right.
So, since Glenn brought it up, how do you handle adoptions? Because, I mean, obviously, you're a rescue. Most rescues want to adopt their horses so they have a job and a good life and a person. So how do you all handle that?
You know, I consider myself a bit of an adoption Nazi, and I don't mean that in the most negative fashion. But we kind of make a silent promise to these horses that for whatever reason, they end up coming here to Rainbow Meadows, they're not going to be at risk in the future. And so we have a very complicated adoption contract. We have a mandatory reporting process. They report to us on a monthly basis for 6 months. We call that the honeymoon period. We would rather the horses come back than not be appreciated or cared for. And then we require an annual report for the life of the horse. That's how committed we are. We also give our horses away for free. We do not charge adoption fees. I have a real problem with money being exchanged for horses, treating them as a commodity. And so we give them away for free. And we do our due diligence. We interview the people. They have to come here. We go to the facility where the horses are going to stay. We want our horses to be in a safe place. Doesn't have to be a fancy place, but a safe place. And then within that contract that I mentioned earlier, we have mandated annual wellness that has to be included and documented and provided to us, which includes dental care on an annual basis, routine vaccinations, deworming, hoof care. And then we need reports of any significant injuries or illnesses that might impact the quality of life of the horse. So those things are in place. And we do this, again, I mentioned earlier, we are a fully volunteer organization, and we work really hard to raise funds for our organization, which is a 501c3. We did elect to stand for what is called verification by the Global Federation of Animal Sanctuaries. What that means to your listeners is we feel as though we wanted to be evaluated for our policies, our protocols, our animal welfare, the facility itself, the dedication of the volunteer staff, and be reviewed by this global federation and see if we could meet their standards, and we did. And so we really try to do this right, and we really try to do it for the benefit of the horses, not for the benefit of the people.
I can't help it. I'm still on your page. I'm sorry. But so I'm looking
Glenn,
at
when are you going to come visit?
I'm looking. Well, you know, I rescued a Hackney a couple of years ago who was an absolutely starving case. And now he's fat and happy and has a job as a little driving pony. I posted a video on our Horses in the Morning page this morning. He saw his first cows and went crazy and was running around and acting like a Hackney. So you can see that video on our Horses in the Morning page. But I'm looking at Kai here, is about the same height he is, 11'3", going on, you know, 12 hands. And what a little cutie Kai is. I'm a sucker for about that size pony. And he looks like he had the same story as my Hackney, was just a starving case when you got him and it's starting to fill out.
Yeah, his story was very, very sad, and he's beautiful. He is only a yearling, so he's got a lot of growing to do. We have both his dam as well as his sire here now. We were called in on a seizure of 9 animals. If you include the fact that his dam was not only nursing him, but also was pregnant, and she is due to deliver any time, and was a body condition score of a 1. When you consider all of that, she had a pasture mate that had a similar body condition score, fortunately was not pregnant, had a baby at the same time as Kai was born, which was May of 2014, but that baby had died and was found dead and half burned on the property when we seized these horses. So, you know, it's a really sad situation when we bring these horses in, and especially when they're babies and they've been severely neglected. We always worry, will we be able to be successful? And we have been so far. There will come a time when we won't be, but we're able to bring them forward. And part of the reason we can is because we use a nutritional product that just allows us to do incredible things. And Alice is familiar with it. It's called Thrive. But that feed product gives me the confidence that I can, if I can get these horses to eat, that I can save their lives. And Kai absolutely was the most horrific looking little baby you have ever seen in your life. And now he is just stunning. If you go to our Facebook page, which is just Rainbow Meadows Equine Rescue and Retirement, I have a video on there of Kai and how gorgeous he is. And he's going to be somebody's buddy one of these days.
Yeah, he definitely is. He's got all the chrome too. He's got the headlight, yeah. And he's got all 4. So he's got all the chrome on there. He's cool.
He is a true black. So he is going to stay black with those 4 white socks, and he's just flashy, very flashy.
Very
That's
good.
Cool. Yes, I think Glenn should come see you guys and.
I think so, too. He could come and visit you and come up and see me.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be a problem.
Exactly. It's not that far.
Jennifer's going, no.
No more horses, right? No more horses.
Yes, right.
Speaking of horses, Alice, I'm meeting the SPCA of McKinney, Texas in Oklahoma City next week, Wednesday. They had a seizure involving a number of horses, including stallions, and we agreed to take one of the horses that was just castrated, so he's no longer a stallion, but his behavior will be. So I'll be meeting the SPCA of Texas in Oklahoma to take one of the stallions because they didn't know how to manage a stallion and they didn't have a place for him in the program. So our reach is pretty extensive. Even though we're in southern Kansas, we have rescued out of Texas, Missouri, Illinois, Nebraska, certainly Kansas and Oklahoma. We have adopted as far away as Nebraska, Wyoming, California, of course, Missouri, Oklahoma, Kansas. So we might be this little mom and pop peedunk rescue in southern Kansas, but our influence is felt pretty wide.
Thank you so much for coming. I appreciate coming on the show. I really appreciate you taking the time out of a very busy day to tell us about the rescue, and hopefully this will make more people aware of you guys and help, you know, continue your work.
I appreciate that. Glenn, thank you for mentioning our website. I'm going to do it one more time for anybody who wants to learn more, and that is simply www.rainbowmeadowsranch.com, and also to all of the Facebook fans to go in and search for us under Rainbow Meadows Equine Rescue and Retirement Incorporated. We'd love to say hello to some of your listeners.
Very good. Thank you so much. RainbowMeadowsRanch.com.
Thank you very much, Glenn.
Well, that was fun. I love looking at the pictures. I just love looking at the pictures of little rescue horses. And there's a bunch more on there, too. So she's centrally located in the country. If you're in that area and are looking to adopt one, she doesn't even charge an adoption fee. I mean, I've never heard of that before. You know, she's pretty picky about who she adopts to, but still, I mean,
I suspect that they will always take donations, though, and people who adopt are probably so happy with their horses that they tend to give back more, you know, more than if they just charged a one-time fee. That would be
right.
Like,
you know, I mean, most of them do it just because we've adopted a number of horses and dogs because we have greyhounds, so we adopt them. And, you know, normally the fee just covers their health care that they've received before adoption anyway, spaying and neutering and things like that. But, yeah, very cool. Neat lady. Well, we are going to take a break for our song. We have a horse girl by the name of Raquel Renner today with a song called I Want to Know You. And then we're coming back, and we're going to talk a little trail riding and competing in Alaska, of all places. I bet you that season's pretty short. You got to get your riding in a short period of time up there. We'll find out as we talk to Lori, whose name we can't say. So we'll be right back.
I want to walk with you. I want to talk with you. I want to see the world through your eyes. I want to stay with you. I want to play with you. Hear the rain fall down from your sky. Don't be afraid. You think they mean? I want to feel what makes your heart beat. If you take a stand that I don't understand, it's okay if it's confusing to me. Uncomplicated.
Yeah.
walk with you. I want to talk with you. I want to see the world through your eyes.
Well, that was Raquel Renner. She's a horse girl here in Southern Florida, and she does a great job. You can find all of her music at RaquelRenner.com, or you can look it up on iTunes. It's all there as well. You're listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenda Geek here with Alice from the NATRC. And, of course, Coach Jen is in the producer chair. And, Alice, we are brought to you today by who?
We are here today by the Trail Versatility Championship, which is being offered starting this weekend in Texas. Elaine Swiss, who is a former NATRC board member and current ride manager, has put together three rides that broach three different disciplines. And then there's a prize at the end for the person who has the highest score from all three events. The first event is the Old Glory Endurance Ride, which is at Perry Haynes Ranch this weekend. Perry Haynes is in Killeen, and it may be the only place that has dry trails left on Earth. I'm not sure about that, but they keep telling me the trails are beautiful down there. And so that's happening, and there's still room in the ride. People can just show up and enter. There's no limit to the number of people, and I suspect they're going to have a lot of riders this weekend. And I know they're offering at least a 25 and a 50, but you'll have to check the endurance calendar to see if there's anything over a 50, because I don't have that information. Then the second ride is also offered at Perry Haynes Ranch in September. It's the weekend after Labor Day, and it's called the Pony Pilot Texas Trail Challenge. And it's a one-day trail challenge that's 10 obstacles over approximately 10 miles. And the best part about this ride is there's RV hookups if you have a trailer to plug in, or you can rent a bed in a cabin. So there's a place to sleep with air conditioning. And even better than that, there's a swimming pool. So after you've ridden all day, you can go swimming. And then on Sunday, there's a barbecue picnic and a fun ride up to the highest point on Perry Haynes Ranch. It's called Ivy Mountain. And then the third
of the
event.
I got to ask you, that sounds like a big, Perry Haynes Ranch sounds like one of those big ones too.
It was. There's a really good story behind Perry Haynes. Briefly, the woman who owned it, her name was Perry Haynes, and when she died, she left it to the state of Texas to be used for the benefit of the Texas orphans. And there's not really an orphanage system that in Texas, and so in theory, the proceeds from the ranch go to benefit like Child Protective Services and to help with, you know, underprivileged children. So, and a few years ago, there was a push to try to sell the land because they were like, oh, well, it'll benefit Texas so much better if we sell it. And we're like, no. And so there was a big thing in the legislature, and all the riders called in and was like, no, because we keep coming. You know, what are they gonna, is that money really going to go into the orphanage fund? Anyway, it was a big brouhaha.
Well, I got to tell Jennifer that they just had Horse and Mule Days there. I knew I'd seen this somewhere.
Yeah.
They just had Horse and Mules Day there last weekend, and one of Jennifer's favorite singers that we play, Kristen Harris, was there doing her live thing. So she was there.
That
neat. It looks like there's a couple thousand acres, still a pretty big place.
It is. There's two sides to the ranch. There's the east side of the ranch, which is run by a lady named Anna Truby, and she has put in pens for every site, and there's a couple of bunkhouses, and she just brought in this cute, cute little cottage that you can rent for the weekend. And there's a bunch of hookups, and there's, you know, there's some bathrooms and a couple of showers. And then there's the west side, which is run by a lady named Kate Love, who and there's like the other cabin, and they did Camp Coca-Cola there in the summer. It's like a wilderness camp for underprivileged teens. And then they have, they're going to have riding there starting in the fall. You'll be able to go on that side. So you can stay either on the east side or the west side, and each have different amenities that make them appealing. The west side has more land, but, and has the swimming pool, but the east side has better amenities and hookups and that kind of thing. So
got it.
Then the, and then the third ride of this series is going to be our Christmas ride, and it'll be the first weekend of December, and it will also be on the west side. So again, you won't have a swimming pool then because it'll be too cold, but you will have cabins to stay in or hookups. So there's a really warm place to stay so you can compete in this competition. And it's, you know, it's and then at the end, there's a beautiful trophy that is sponsored by the three ride managers. And it's just a really cool challenge for somebody who wants to try, like maybe somebody's an endurance rider and they want to try NATRC, or they're a trail challenge person. You know, you have to do at least the 25 mile in the endurance ride, but you just give it a shot, and it's a really awesome opportunity. And we thank Elaine for bringing that to us.
Very good. So, and now we head from Texas to the other side.
That's right. Laurie, can you tell us your last name, because we keep butchering it?
It's Knutila.
See, I knew
I was close.
Knutila.
I was
you were
closest.
Close.
Yes.
Knutila.
So Laurie Knutila is an NATRC ride manager who lives, rides, and manages in Alaska. And just tell us a little bit about yourself and how, were you born in Alaska or did you move there?
No, I'm originally from Colorado, and I moved up here with my family 40 years ago, so I've been here quite a while. I've always loved horses, and I had horses in Colorado, and then after I came to Alaska, I got horses again, and I currently own three horses, and I've done a lot of different disciplines. I've shown a lot. I've worked with 4-H kids. I taught lessons and trained horses for a while, but my first love has always been trail riding, so I have, in more recent years, have just focused more on trail riding and riding my own horses, so that's kind of what I do, just trail ride.
Well, I don't think we just trail ride. That's pretty, we're not just trail riders. So I'm curious what the per capita population of horses are. I mean, like, compared to, I mean, I don't know. I mean, are there a lot of horses in Alaska, or is it something that people don't tend to take on as a challenge very often? Like, how common is it to own horses?
It's more common in the Anchorage area, but here in the interior, there's still a lot of horses here. A number of years ago, they did a sort of a little crude census, and they came up with a figure of 4,000 to 5,000 horses around here between Fairbanks and Delta Junction, which is about 100 miles south. But that was a number of years ago, and I know a lot more horses have been imported into Alaska since then. So I have no idea how many there are. There's a lot, and a lot of them are just backyard horses that maybe get used once a year for hunting trips and that kind of thing. But there are a lot of horses here. It's amazing, actually, how many horses there are here.
Well, you had told me a little bit about the challenges of keeping horses, and the one that fascinated me the most was the idea that you guys don't have, everybody doesn't just have water, like municipal water or well water. Could you talk about that a little bit? Because that kind of boggled my mind.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny because I never really thought of it as something that was that, you know, out of the ordinary, because it's just how it is around here. But yeah, if you're not in the city, which, you know, they don't allow horses in the city around here. So if you have horses, you're in the country. So you don't have access to a municipal water supply. So you either have a well or you have a holding tank system, or in some cases, people don't have water at all. But in our case, we have a holding tank. Wells are extremely expensive to put in. And they're also a big risk because the water might not be good, or there might not be much of it. So putting in an expensive well and taking a gamble on having good water is kind of not something that a lot of people will do. So we use holding tank systems, and then to fill the holding tank, you either haul your own water, which involves having a tank in the bed of your pickup truck that you get water in town at several dispensaries that sell water, or you can have a water delivery. There's several water delivery companies here that deliver water, but it's much more expensive than hauling it yourself.
And, Lori, I got to tell you, we watch Buying Alaska, the TV show, and you
right.
guys are just crazy up there. I just when I see that the people are still using outhouses in the middle of winter with the bears, I'm out. I'm just out. I'm not in that at all. You're crazy. Just saying.
Well, is that very common? Do more people use outhouses in the winter than have indoor plumbing? I can't imagine that.
No,
no. The case.
I mean, I have an outhouse here, but I also have indoor plumbing, so.
Well, so do you have like a big cistern system then set up so you have water for the house after it's hauled in? And
correct. We have a holding tank, and then that's hooked to a pressure system that's plumbed into the house, so. Yeah.
See, I lived in a house in Iowa for about a year that had a cistern on the porch, and they had recently, before we bought this house, it was 10 acres that came with a house, and they had hand-pumped water from their well into the cistern until the municipal water had been installed, which had only been about a year previous. So I just think about that. It just seems like a lot of work.
Yeah, it's a lot of work, and it can be challenging to keep the water in a liquid state when it's cold in the winter.
Yeah. So how do you do that?
Keep
the water in a liquid,
well,
yeah.
When we live about 20 miles out of town, so when we get water, we just fill it up at the last minute and haul it home, and it's still in a liquid state when we get here. Sometimes the valve on our truck tank will freeze, but we have ways of getting it open, so it's an interesting challenge. But I, like I said, I never even thought of it as being unusual because it's just how it is. So
when it comes to riding, I know that you put on that you manage an NNTRC ride. Is it just one ride, or are there two rides per year? And tell us a little bit about the clinic that you're going to be doing.
We have just one ride a year. In past years, we have done two rides, one here in Fairbanks and one in the Anchorage area, but it got to be kind of logistically challenging to keep judges here for 2 weekends. So in more recent years, we've gone to a system of rotating the ride between here in Fairbanks and then one in the Wasilla area. And it works pretty good that way because in the year that we don't have a ride, then we can do fundraisers and stuff. And the sport is definitely growing. A couple of years ago, well, I think it was like 2012, I think Alaska had one of the biggest rides in the whole nation. We had 50 riders that year.
Oh, wow.
And it's sort of dropped a little bit in rider numbers, but we still have between 35 and 45 riders at our ride. The clinic that I'm doing, I'm just trying to encourage people who are not familiar with the sport to feel a little more comfortable doing it. There's a lot of interest in it, but people are not really sure what they're getting into. So I'm doing a two-part clinic. I did one part already, and I have the second part coming up next weekend. And then the first part was in April, kind of at the beginning of our riding season, and I did just a more of a lecture demonstration type of a day that day, just to familiarize people with what NATRC is all about and the judging and, you know, things that judges look for, how to condition your horse and that kind of thing. And then this next weekend, the participants will actually bring their horses and we'll do a little mock ride, you know, starting with bed in and then go on a short ride and then do a vet out, and just help them to feel more comfortable when they do come to the ride.
So when you're trail riding in Alaska, you know, either at a ride or just for fun, what are some of the wildlife that you might encounter, and how, you know, how dangerous is it, and what should people do? I mean, like you're riding along, and like what are you likely to see?
Moose are probably the most common wildlife that you see out on the trails. But we also have, this was in the winter, but I have encountered a wolf out on the trail. In all my years of riding in Alaska, I've never encountered a bear. I have seen tracks, but I've never actually seen the animal, which that's okay. They can stay away.
Yeah, they can stay away. Do they ever go after, do bear ever go after horses, or are they just too big?
No, I've never heard of one going after horses.
Okay.
Well, I take that back. Down in Anchorage, they have a bear problem in the Anchorage area, and they have gone after horses down there, but I haven't heard of that happening around here. I'm sure if they had the opportunity, they would, but it's, you know, the opportunity doesn't really present itself that often. And they tend to stay away from people. They tend to stay out in their own habitat, and they don't tend to hang around people that much. So
probably a good thing.
Yeah.
Well, what do you do? Like, if you run into a moose, I've heard that moose don't see very well, and they're not easy to get off the trail. So what do you do if there's a moose in your way? Like, you're going home, and here's a moose.
They usually will run from the horses or people. If you encounter a mama with her baby, she's less likely to... you know, she may think of you as a threat to her baby and, you know, want to get rid of, you know, chase you away. But usually when I'm going down the trail and I see a moose, they're usually going the other way because I've spooked them and they've taken off the other way. Sometimes they will spook the horses as they take off, you know, so that's, you have to be kind of ready for your horse to spook from a moose when they do see them. So I've never had one not want to leave the trail. They usually, you know, if you yell at them, if they're just standing there and you yell at them, they'll usually take off. So
do you ride in the winter, or is the riding season pretty short? And like, I mean, I didn't know if the snow and the cold would keep you from going out, or how that works.
I do ride in the winter, but if you ride in the winter, it depends on what your tolerance for cold weather is. And the older I get, the higher my temperature cutoff goes. So I used to ride down to like minus 20, but now my temperature cutoff is more like plus 25, which for us, that's warm in the winter because
it's funny how the older we get, the more that happens.
Yeah.
Both directions.
Yeah. So
I can see we're plus 25.
The season is short. The season is short. We usually get snow in October, and it'll stay around until first part of April starts to melt off. So we do have a short season, but depending on your cold tolerance and the winter itself, some winters are warmer than others, so you have more opportunity to ride. But, you know, you can ride all winter if you're really dedicated and don't mind the cold.
Do you have to use any special gear for you or the horses? I mean, like for you, obviously staying warm, but I mean, do the horses sink in the snow? Is it hard packed? I mean, how do you make yourself safe on the trail when there's snow and it's cold?
It depends on how deep the snow is. Sometimes, you know, it's a lot deeper than other years. I tend to stick to snow-packed roads.
Okay.
And I do have a trail system here that I can ride. That one issue that we have in the winter time is there's a lot of dog mushers here in the area where I live, and they use the trails a lot in the winter. And the horses, when they use snow machines to pack the trails for the dogs, and then if you ride a horse on that pack trail, they'll punch holes in the trail, and then the dogs have a hard time with it if it's punched full of holes. So I try to stay off of any trail that's used by dog mushers. So I tend to stick to the more snow-packed roads and that and kind of stay off of the trails that are used by the mushers.
So what do the horses think about, like, have you ever been riding and been passed by a group of mushers? I mean, or like a team of mushers? I mean, is that something that happens?
It can, and horses tend to, I'm not sure what goes on in their brains, but they tend to maybe think of a pack of, or a dog team as a pack of wolves, and they tend to spook from them big time. So, and the other thing about a dog team is they are very quiet. When they're running, they're very quiet. They don't bark, they don't make any noise. And so they can come up on you suddenly, and all of a sudden there they are because you haven't heard them coming. And then the horse sees this pack of animals coming at them, and they tend to spook big time from dog teams. So, and that's another reason that I do stay off of dog mushing trails, is just because horses' reactions to dog teams are can be extreme.
So if you get tired of riding in Alaska and you want to go ride somewhere else, how far do you have to drive to get to another trail system?
Within Alaska, or you mean outside of Alaska?
Even like Canada or the United States, how long does it take you to get, like, to leave Alaska? Like, you know, like for us, I'll drive 5 hours and be in Oklahoma.
Well, that's nobody yeah. leaves Alaska. They just stay.
Yeah. No, and Lori did once. I saw her in Kansas City in February. So.
Oh, she does leave Alaska. Okay. All right.
Yeah, but that's usually by plane.
True.
Nobody drives from Alaska to anywhere.
If you were to drive out of Alaska with a horse trailer, which I've done it several times, people do it all the time. There's actually, you know, people who commercially haul horses back and forth from Alaska and the lower 48. But it's to get to the northern tier states like Washington and Montana and that area, you're looking at least 6 to 7 days of trailering to get there from Alaska. And, of course, you have to have a passport for yourself to get through Canada, and you have to have international health paperwork for your animals. And so it's an expedition to trailer out of Alaska, and it takes several days to get out.
So you got to be motivated, really, really motivated.
Motivated and prepared, because the area between Alaska and the lower 48 is pretty remote. There's not a lot of amenities or services, especially in the winter. So if you're going to think about trailering out, you need to really be prepared and have your act together and have everything you need to take care of yourself.
So that makes me think of something else. How is your forage? Like, what kind of grasses do you have? What kind of hay do you guys grow? Or do you have to have it shipped up because the growing season is short?
No, there's actually a lot of hay grown in Alaska. Here in the Fairbanks area, the main hay grass is timothy and brome. In the Anchorage area, they grow a few other varieties. I'm not sure what all they grow down there, but there's actually a lot of hay produced here. It's expensive, and that's another one of the challenges of keeping horses in Alaska, is just the expense of everything. So grass actually does grow pretty well here. We get a lot of sunshine in the summer. Of course, it's light, you know, 24 hours a day here in the summer, so... grass grows pretty well. One challenge that we do have is getting it baled, sometimes, especially in the Anchorage area where they get a lot more rain than we do. The window of getting hay baled can be pretty small. So last summer was a bad hay year for us because we got way too much rain. We had a lot of rain last summer. Getting the hay up was a bit of a challenge for the farmers. And then the summer before that, we had like a drought where we got no rain. So that was, the hay just didn't grow much that year because we didn't get much rain. So growing hay in Alaska can be an exercise in frustration. And there is hay that is, some people do import hay from the lower 48, but of course that's even more expensive. So Yeah, it's one of the challenges of living here is just the sheer expense of everything.
Wow. Well, it sounds really fascinating. It makes me want to fly to Alaska and borrow a horse and compete in an ATRC. Or just trail ride.
Well,
in fact, one of my friends is coming to visit, is taking a RV trip, and I think she contacted you. She's coming up around Labor Day.
Right. Yes, she
is. Gonna...
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show today. And I have a feeling that we have more we could chat about, but unfortunately we're out of time. So I look forward to hearing more about it in the future.
Okay.
Thanks
thank
a
you.
Lot.
Thanks for having me.
Take All care.
Right. Bye.
Okay. You know what? The scenery, too, has to be amazing. You know, every place you ride is going to have amazing scenery because that's just what happens in Alaska.
I was just thinking how hard it would be if you had seasonal, people who get depressed in the winter and have more energy in the summer, because you'd like go hard all summer and then crash when there's no sun.
Right. Exactly.
It would be hard.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, that was neat. That was a neat interview and a neat show. Thank you so much for putting that together. Why don't you tell us about what's coming up in the ride calendar and where people can find it?
All right. Well, the ride calendar, the complete ride calendar, is at natrc.org. But a couple of upcoming rides in June is the Flying R Ranch Ride, which is in West Plains, Missouri, is June 13th and 14th, and it is a wonderful place. I rode there the first time they put that ride on. It's a neat little resort right in the middle of the Mark Twain National Forest, and you can rent a room. They serve food. They have stalls for all the horses. It'd be a great place to try in a TRC if you're nervous about the whole tying to the trailer thing, because the amenities are just fantastic. And then our ride that we were supposed to have this weekend that was postponed, Indian Territory, will be in Sand Springs, Oklahoma, June 20th and 21st. And this is one of the longest continuing running rides in Region 4, and I think perhaps the whole country. I think it's like 28 years in a row that they've had this ride. So we were all very eager to have it rescheduled. And then, of course, you know, there's the Versatility Challenge starting this weekend at Perry Haynes Ranch. So people interested in trying an AERC ride, then they can do the other two legs of the challenge as well.
Very good. And, of course, you can find all the information about the NATRC at natrc.org. If you've missed past episodes that Alice has done, she's always here on the third Thursday of every month. You can head over to horsesinthemorning.com and just search for NATRC. It'll bring up all the past episodes, and you can go back and take a listen to those. A lot of good, interesting stuff if you're at all interested in trail riding or competing or any of that. And, of course, you can find the best way to listen to our show is on the recorded version of Horses in the Morning is on the Horse Radio Network app. It's free. It's easy. Just go to the iOS or Android app store and search for Horse Radio Network and download it there. And I did want to mention that for all the listeners who tune in just for the NATRC day, welcome, by the way, we are switching our technology of how we're doing the Horses in the Morning show. So when you come, if you listen live, the player will be a little different when you go to listen live the next time. You can still go to the same places that you've always gone to listen, but the player will be a little different. It's a little better, and we're hoping to improve the sound quality from AM radio to satellite radio sound quality. So I would say bad AM radio to satellite radio quality. So we're going to hopefully have that next time you're here. And we'll be back tomorrow morning with Horses in the Morning at 9 a.m. Eastern. It's Friday, so it's Really Bad Ads Day. Get on Craigslist today and look for Really Bad Ads. Send them to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com and get them in to copy and paste the entire ad into the email, and we'll have some great prizes for you. That's brought to you by EquityMFG.com. Did I miss anything, Alice?
I don't think so.
All right.
Sounds
very good.
Good.
Thank you, Alice.
Thank
have
you, Glenn.
Fun. Right, next month, enjoy your ride. So hope it stops raining.
I hope so,
least,
too. At least
it
slows down a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. At least it only rains a little bit. That'd be good. A little bit.
Yeah.
Be safe, everyone. Get your emergency preparedness done.